Oh, good evening.
Good evening.
I have a message from Hisayo.
Which I will share with you later.
Because I want to introduce everyone around. I did a spontaneous thing for myself a couple of days ago. I thought I would look at Meetup and see what there was that I could do. Talks I could go, walks I could share. And when I got in there and saw all the things there were, I thought, we should be there. Meetup. It's an online gathering of many, many people in many, many different interests. And we have two members here tonight. Thank you very much. It's wonderful that you could come. So let's do introductions around.
Judy.
Jeffrey.
Suzanne.
Karen. Samia.
Mike.
Mom.
Wendy,
Carolyn,
Kelly,
and Angie. So it's all new to me. It's something of a system, and I was not very clear in the beginning, and I think it's fine now. But I hope we can share this. I hope we can share this experience more widely in San Jose. So what we're studying is Suzuki Roshi's book about what we just chanted, the Sandokai, branching streams in the darkness. Flow in the darkness. This is a very ancient and wonderful poem that was written long, long ago, which is trying to say the impossible to say. We always think that there's just one side or the other side. It's got to be black or it's got to be white, but it's very hard for our mind to wrap around the fact that it's both. That if we can think two things, it is two things. That's how our mind works. And then there's an extra step to separate them. So the whole notion of Zen, the whole thought of Buddha, what is to simply see how the mind is working. And to accept it, but not believe it. We don't have to believe everything that we think. So that's the basis of this whole little exercise called branching streams flowing in the darkness. And of course it's a poem, so it sounds a little mysterious. So Suzuki Roshi takes it a little bit at a time. And this is the fifth talk today. Today we may be very happy, and the next day we don't know what will happen to us. I think that's very true these days, I think. We forget about what's happening around us, and we start being happy, and then we start thinking about things, and we don't know what's going to happen, and it gets very... scary, I think. Many people are anxious at this point. So this is a way of being with our anxiety and understanding that it's just a little mistake that we're making with our thinking. But it's not true. There's a much bigger truth and a much more comforting truth and a much kinder one. So Suzuki says, he talks about this, of course. We understand things in two ways, in darkness and in the light of form. In form, we see things as good and bad. We know there is no good and bad in things themselves. We're imposing that. That's a label that we put on things. This is a tricky teaching because often it's easy to say, well, there's no good or bad, so it doesn't matter what I do. And that isn't what it means at all. It means to be careful about how I think, mind my thinking, tend to it carefully. And that's why we have the precepts. We say not to kill, not to steal, not to lie. That's embedded in the teaching of Buddha. He says, in utter darkness, good words and bad words will not disturb you. But, of course, in the light, it bothers us a lot. And so it's another one of the precepts to mind what we say. And mind how we take in what is said to us as well. We can easily be hurt. We have a whole nervous system that takes in everything and applies it to every organ of our body and informs us. So if we don't understand how we take in what happens to us, it can be devastating, even though we may be misunderstanding deeply. So then Suzuki goes on to talk about teachers hitting the student, which we don't do. I don't think he did, actually. I never heard that Suzuki Roshi ever hit anybody. But it's in all the old Chinese stories, the Chinese, ancient Chinese stories. They were pretty hearty guys, and they clobbered each other and poked each other in the eye and did all kinds of rude things in order to awaken them. But Soto Zen is a much more apparently quiet practice, which doesn't go in for those kind of things. It's much more that we pull the rug out from under each other. It's very subtle, but we're always very attentive to where the truth lies. And we can point it out and speak it. And as soon as we speak the truth, oh, it changes everything. And sometimes it's a shock to somebody who is maybe pushing things a little bit too far. So it's an interesting practice, but it's not a hitting one. It can be pretty tough. My teacher was really quiet and very small and gentle with a tiny voice. But, he felt so mean sometimes. It was just like that, right in the heart. And it's because I was being an idiot, you know. So, count your blessings. You're talking about a famous koan where a monk asks a master, if it's so hot, how can I get out of this heat? This is very timely because we're going to get really hot in the next couple of days. And the teacher says, why don't you go to a place where it's not hot or cold? And then the disciple said, is there a place that's neither hot or cold? And the master said, when it's cold, you should be a cold Buddha. And when it's hot, be hot. And believe me, that helps a lot. Try it out as it heats up tomorrow and the next day. So much of our suffering comes from resisting what's going on, resisting the things that we can't do anything about. We can't turn off the sun. We can't turn off El Niño. But we can turn off our objections to everything. Because Buddhas know both sides of reality, they have a kind of composure. They're not disturbed by something bad or ecstatic about something good. They have a true joy that will always be with them. This is really important. This is what our life is. It's a deep joy. When you're happy, you should just enjoy the happiness. He said we can do this because we are ready for anything. So if it comes, embrace it. But if circumstances change suddenly, we don't mind. Today, we may be very happy, and the next day, we don't know what will happen to us. When we're ready for what will happen tomorrow, then we can enjoy today completely. You do this not by studying a lecture, but through your practice of meditation. In meditation, we bring ourselves back to the present moment over and over again, even though our mind wants to go off in every single direction, and does as we sit. As we sit, we can bring it back. Oh, I was just thinking about what happened yesterday. Oh, I'm thinking about what I'm going to have for dinner. Oh, all those are thoughts. Eiken Roshi said, our brain squirts thoughts like the stomach squirts juices. It's just a natural form that the brain takes. It's just putting it out all the time. Our trouble comes when we keep engaging and engaging and engaging without realizing what's happening. We have some great thoughts, very, very wonderful, deep, precious thoughts, but not all of them are like that. So we need to be very, very discerning in order to find our joy and our happiness. Otherwise, we're like a little mouse. We're always running after this one, and then, oh, that's, and I'm running after another one, and it's exhausting. Best to stay put. So the sitting practice is stay put so that we can get up and with grace meet what comes and meet it without being kerfluffled so much. Of course, we are kerfluffled. We just are. But if we know ourselves, understand ourselves, and let us be what we are. Sometimes say, be the idiots that we are. We are so often not the brightest star in the sky. We're just little human beings trying to make our way in this mysterious universe. This vast, mysterious universe that is us, to which we're totally connected with everything. Roshi goes on to talk about Dogen Zenji, who is a famous teacher in Japan many, many hundreds of years ago, who is very often studied in Soto Zen. And he comments about his teaching that Dogen did not get caught up in word games like the hot and cold koan kind of tricky things, you know, that student asks and the teacher gives a tricky answer. Dogen just cut right through all of that. He said Dogen was more interested in a koan like, when it's cold, you should be a cold Buddha, and when it's hot, you should be a hot Buddha, and that's all. Just let that be enough. To be completely involved in what you're doing without thinking about various things is Dogen's way. This kind of attainment is reached through actual practice of meditation, not through words. I met somebody on my walk this afternoon, and I had forgotten my sunglasses and my hat, and she was very concerned. She's one of my neighbors, and she said, "Oh, you shouldn't be out like this." She said, "What were you doing?" And I said, "Well, I was studying a Buddhist book." And she said, "Oh, but why do they have so many books?" She said, "It's so simple." I said, I know, it's so simple. But we have to find words to express it in some way. And all through the centuries, people keep trying to find words to express it in order to confirm for each other our own experience in meditation. We can sit by ourselves, and we do, and we can confirm ourselves, but that's not enough. That's why a community, a sangha, is so important. Because the sangha are brothers and sisters in practice. Confirm for each other, yes, yes, this is our experience too. So this is tremendously helpful. And gives us the true sense that we are all belonging to not just the small sangha, but to everyone. That it's about being with everyone. He says, Dogen Zenji's way is to find the meaning in each being, like a grain of rice or a cup of water. You may say a cup of water or a grain of rice is something that you see in brightness as a thing, but when you pay full respect to the grain of rice, I mean when you actually respect it as you respect Buddha himself, then you will understand that a grain of rice is absolute. When you live completely involved in the dualistic world, you have the absolute world in its true sense. When you practice Zazen without seeking for enlightenment or seeking for anything, then there is true enlightenment. Sometimes this is disappointing to people. There's always the idea that if I do just work really, really hard at meditation, that something marvelous is going to happen. And it's not about that. It's about the marvel it is to be right here, breathing right now, in every moment, which we overlook mostly because we're rushing from here to there and back again. So to discover the place in us that can be quietly present is the gift of our practice. So that's more or less what he has to say in this chapter, and there's time for questions. comments, discussion?
I'm a little bit confused by that last line that you said, when you live completely involved in the dualistic world, you have the absolute world.
If you get truly involved and know the grain of rice for itself, each thing is a Buddha, you could say, is a piece of the cosmos, is breathing and alive. And
so
a part of us.
Our normal perception is that it's not.
Yes, it's
so
just.
That's the dualistic world.
Exactly.
So, but you're just.
When we think it's just a bunch of stuff,
yeah.
It feels like it's a bunch of stuff out there. But if we connect with it this way and this way, it's a very visceral connection that we can make. We do it with little babies or puppies or a beautiful bouquet of flowers or things like that, but we don't usually do it with a grain of rice or something we don't like, a motorcycle roaring down the street. But what he's pointing to is that we're connected to all of it, and it is us. We just don't accept that because we don't know how. So we're learning how. We're slowly, slowly learning how. And it's a beautiful experience. And sometimes we can be very grateful and very compassionate, and sometimes we can be extremely grumpy. So that's part of it too. Wendy?
Angie. How do we connect with what's going on in the world today, all the injustice and suffering? How can we meet it when it's not always close to us, it's not always next door, but sometimes it is?
We suffer with it. It's our suffering. And if there's nothing we can do, we accept that there's nothing we can do. It's like the rain, it's raining. It's like the war, it's warring. And if there's some step that we can take to help people, then we take that. We enact our life and our compassion for others. But we can't go out and stop the war. We can't change the whole electoral system. Though it would be a good idea. There are lots of things that would help that we can't do. To think that we should is a kind of hubris. It's false pride. We don't have that kind of power, and we don't need that kind of power. Our power is about what's happening to us right here, right now. And to take the very best care of what's happening here, to be kind to people, to do what we can to help people that we can help. I know what you mean. I started watching a movie called The City of God last night, and I had to stop watching it. It was so hard to watch. Young boys learning to be criminals in Brazil, in the barrio. It's a terrible, beautiful, terrible movie. But I'm not going to get on an airplane and go to Brazil. I can't do it. And neither can you. But you're doing a lot. If it's not enough, do some more.
I just wonder if I was in that situation, would my practice help?
Well, you'd have to try and see.
Try being homeless.
Yeah. No, there's a teacher who actually takes his students out into the streets and has them sit, be homeless. Start out with, I don't think anything in their pocket. I don't think they start with any money at all at the bus station in New York City. And just see what it's like for a week. So there's that opportunity. I mean, any of us could do that. You could do that.
I did it when I was in my 20s, but I don't know about now.
So that isn't really the point. The point is how our practice is informing this very moment that we're living. It's not an idea. It's a real good question. Everybody's asking it. Yes. Yes. Thank you. Well, it's almost 12. I mean, 8. So I will read you Hisayo Lipton's little note. She was a student here for 3-4 years. She and her husband, Bob, and suddenly, when they both retired up and moved up to an island in the, off of, what's the?
Seattle.
Out off of Seattle. I always forget the name of that channel that's up there.
Puget Sound,
yeah. They're up there on an island, and she says, I hope all is well with you and friends in the floating Zendo Sangha. Bob and I are doing very well, enjoying our daily walks and working in the garden. We bought an old house and have been fixing it. Except for the bathroom mirror and several doors, it is all done. And we finally finished moving in. We also discovered Mark Lancaster is holding weekly sits at the Bodhi Center, a meditation center on the island, and started to sit with him on Wednesday mornings. He asked about you and sends his regards. They started the Zazen sessions in February, and the Sangha is very small and very relaxed. We are very happy we found them. We've been thinking of you. Please say hi to Wendy, Marie, Ellie, Samia, and all the friends there for me. Sweet. Very sweet woman. Are there announcements?
Yes. We're having a half-day sit Saturday from 9 to noon. And we're going to observe Buddha's birthday. So if you have access to flowers, that would be welcome. We'll have a little ceremony following about 3 or 4 Zazen sessions. And you're welcome to come for all or part of the day.
So it's from 9 to 12?
Yes.
Yeah.
Where is that?
Here. Yeah. Anything else? Well, let's have a 1-minute sit.